Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:15, that's Pacific Summer Time, and today is September 27th. And of course, there's a lot in the media today about the aftermath of the presidential election debate that went on in the US last night. And it is the broadly based conclusion is that Mrs. Clinton came out on top. There we go. What that generally has been received by the market as rather positive, and one of the things that has rallied most is the Mexican peso. That has been the instrument of choice for those wishing to speculate on the US presidential election. But by and large, what it did was it represented a largely bullish factor for stock markets. So the S&P 500 was up about 2/3% today, and the NASDAQ was up almost 1%. The Mexican index was up 1%, and of course the that currency was also fairly strong in here, despite the fact that oil prices were low. What a potential victory for Clinton would mean is that the status quo would be ensured, and therefore this is still a market that is highly dependent on liquidity. And the question then would be, how likely would it be that a Clinton presidency would upset that status quo? And perhaps less likely than a Trump presidency, I think, is the way that the market is reaching a conclusion here. So this is rather positive action on the NASDAQ. And it really is a reassertion here. And when we, if we were to just simply strip the labels off the chart and look at the S&P over the last 5 years, or the NASDAQ over the last 5 years, then we had a particularly consistent advance between 2012 and 2015, and that was coincident with QE3, which was the provision of liquidity. This much more rangy, choppy environment overall has been coincident with the removal of QE3, but it had been very gradual. We have not had a large decline as a result. Then, what is it that is pushing these prices higher here right now? Well, if we go back and look at what is it exactly that has been driving this market since 2009, it has been injections of liquidity. And of course, the speculation is that regardless of which party wins out in the presidential election, that support for a fiscal bump is coalescing. And that would represent an additional source of liquidity, which could help to further inflate asset prices overall. And I posted a very interesting chart in Comment of the Day today, and it's taken from this TCW article, which shows the debt relative to GDP. And that debt is the combination of stock market bond and real estate debt. And we are at a significant peak, but perhaps more important than all of that is that there is no evidence yet that the peak has been reached, rather that we are at a very large overextension relative to the mean, which is represented by GDP, but that there is nothing there to say that this isn't going to continue to inflate. And if that is indeed the case, then we are in the third psychological perception stage of a major bull market, that we have gone through the disbelief. We are going through, and I think probably at the end of acceptance, and moving into the period of time where people simply throw in the towel and say it's no longer really worth considering that we're in an earnings recession, or that valuations on a CAPE, cyclically adjusted PE, are rather high levels, but rather they just simply conclude that as long as the liquidity keeps flowing, then you simply have to participate. It's almost a rehash of Chuck Prince's quip that as long as the music is playing, you have to keep dancing. And that is generally consistent with the third psychological perception stage, which would appear to be what we are moving into. And a sustained move below the 200-day moving average for the S&P or the NASDAQ would really be required to question that. It was, and if we, rather than starting in Asia, maybe if we start, we go east and look at Europe, then it was a Largely quiet day on Europe. The FTSE 100 closed well off its low in here, but it is the banking sector in Europe that is gaining all of the commentary. And rather risible that Merkel today said that Deutsche Bank will not be bailed out. It really does question what does she mean by bailed out, because if she's precluding the possibility that it is going to be nationalized, then I think she's probably not in command of her faculties, considering that Germany has nationalized just about every one of its other banks. There's only two banks that have not yet been nationalized, that's Deutsche and Commerzbank, and both of them may not be bailed out, that's quite true, but they could quite easily be nationalized, not least since Deutsche Bank employs over 100,000 people. When we look elsewhere in the banking sector in Europe, it is Portugal that should really stand out because, for example, BCP, which is one of the country's largest lenders following Banco Espírito Santo's nationalization, I guess it was 18 months ago. Well, BCP is now only trading at a cent and a half, really there isn't much that could go wrong there that would predicate that having to be nationalized. And of course, the Italian banking sector remains also a focus of risk. When we look at the long-term charts of Europe, the banking sector continues to underperform, and it's something that we have reiterated repeatedly, and most particularly at the chart seminar, is that banking sectors generally lead. But perhaps more important than that is that they have to at least perform in line with the market. Because, as liquidity providers, if the banking sector is not at least performing in line with the market, or not signaling that it is in deteriorating sharply, then it tells us that there's something wrong. That if you're providing liquidity and it's a liquidity-fueled bull market, you should be doing all right. You're basically selling something that everybody wants. If banks are not performing well, then there's got to be trouble somewhere. It also puts additional pressure on the central banks to provide even more liquidity because the banking sector is not able to do so. And when you have trouble in the German banking sector, the French banking sector, although obviously the French are certainly not getting the same degree of scrutiny, but the Portuguese and the Italian banking sectors, then there are certainly problems. And if you look at those long-term charts of Europe, then you're presented with this incredibly volatile, ranging environment overall, and it isn't the overall trending environment that you're presented with when you look at Wall Street. It suggests that Europe might be able to play catch up at some point in the future, but there is no evidence that it is about to do so imminently. And against that background, the ability of the UK to negotiate a successful exit from the EU is perhaps more important than ever, because just by looking, and you can really coalesce, or to condense is probably a better word, condense all of the arguments about Brexit, and just look at the charts. And would you rather have the FTSE 100, or would you rather have the stocks 300? And I think if you're just looking at it from a chart perspective, the FTSE 100 is certainly more attractive. And more than any other factor, the success or the ability of the FTSE to be able to break out and to rally in a manner similar to Wall Street will be contingent on a successful negotiation of its exit from the EU. And I don't think it's ever been truer, but breaking up is hard to do. And this is probably the best way to go about it is to say to the EU, it's not you, it's me. And just to go it alone, but we'll definitely see how that is prosecuted over the next year. In Japan today, the Nikkei was stronger by about 0.8%, but I think it is time to just to focus on the second section. It does tend to lead, and it broke out today to a new recovery high. So the yen is still trading at 100 to the dollar, and it hasn't quite broken out to new highs yet. and it might yet do so, and that would act as a headwind to nominal stock prices in Japan. But the relative strength of the second section suggests that it's not all about the value of the yen, and that we could be in for potentially an upside surprise. So I think Japan really is worth keeping an eye on. And the Chinese market was also a bit firmer in here today. The Hang Seng was up over 1%. The mainland Chinese market was also firmer. It's also confirming that the progression of higher reaction lows is still intact, and the banking sector did bounce in here. Now, with a firmer tone on stocks and a very firm tone in bond prices, the long bond in the U.S. was stronger by a full point. And both gilts and bunds were up by about a half a point. We're continuing to see that yields, having unwound that deep overextension relative to the trend mean, have now encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean. The 10-year Treasury yield is back testing the short-term progression of higher reaction lows. And there have been a significant number of reports coming out from major bond houses, the kind of people that make their money from trading bonds, and sounding very cautious indeed. They're worried that the yield, that low that was posted in July, is the low, and that with the potential for interest rate hikes to come in at the end of this year, that bond prices have nowhere to go but down. So they are really sounding the alarm. They're looking really quite cautious. At the same time, what we're seeing right now is that yields are compressing, and it would require just a clear upper dynamic on those yields to check the demand dominance in this market at the present time. And perhaps that would suggest that we are at a pivotal point in the bond markets, but that some of the concerns that are being voiced are potentially medium-term insignificance, and that we don't yet have confirming evidence in terms of price or yield action to confirm that an important peak has been reached. This is perhaps analogous to what we're seeing in the equity markets. And I've posted another chart in here today, which is the overlay between bond prices and or bond yields and equity prices. And this is a rather extraordinary set of circumstances over the last 6 years, because previously bond yields and equity prices moved in lockstep, and that correlation has been destroyed by monetary policy. That what we're actually seeing is inflation in asset prices right across the boards. And I believe that the conclusion is that this is a developing bubble. That would gel rather well with the fact that, or the contention at least, that we're moving into the third psychological perception stage of the bull market in equities. It is potentially that we're also moving into the third psychological perception stage in terms of bonds. We might already be well into it. But that is one conclusion. The more important conclusion is there evidence that it is yet over? And no, there is no evidence of that just yet. And but this is the time to really monitor these charts closely, because when we do get evidence, it will require action. And rather, the temptation is, in the third psychological perception stage, the temptation is to become less vigilant, when in fact we should become more vigilant. And gold prices, because of this rally in stocks and bonds, gold prices were a bit weaker in here today. And if we look at that short-term range in gold prices, there is a progression of lower rally highs just over the last 6 or 7 weeks. It really does need to sustain a move above 1350, 1360 to break that progression of lower rally highs. But that's a very short-term move relative to the medium term, which looks to be still a demand-dominated environment, and it really would need to sustain a move below the trend mean. It is interesting too that the reaction that we saw earlier this year was approximately $100, and this reaction to date in gold prices has not yet been $100. And a pullback all the way to the trend mean would represent a pullback of about $100. So that could still be considered a consistent trend, provided it does not sustain a move below the trend mean. With gold prices pulling back, silver was also weak, platinum was weak, and the gold miners were also weak. And a rally tomorrow would certainly help to confirm that demand is coming back in here, but or that people are using this as a buying opportunity, that there's some bargain hunting going on. But overall, the more important factor would be to break the short-term progression of lower rally highs to really cement the idea that demand has returned to dominance following what has been already a couple of month corrective phase. And perhaps the other big news item in here today is that Iran went to its meeting with OPEC really harboring absolutely no desire to reach a deal on maintaining its supply or even cutting supply. And I think something that is not mentioned nearly enough is that Iran and Saudi Arabia are engaged in proxy wars on at least two, if not three, fronts. So neither of them has a vested interest in helping to advantage the other. Oil prices today were down $1.30 on WTI and almost $1.50 on Brent. And this continues to represent a rangy environment overall, and this is very much the what was to be expected following such an accelerated decline and very impressive short covering rally. And now we move into this right-hand extension phase following the type 2 bottom, and it could be potentially lengthy. So far, it looks like that range is somewhere between about $51 or $52 down to about $40. It would suggest that there's plenty of supply starting to come into the market above 50, and that some of that supply starts to come out of the market when prices drop below 40. And despite the fact that oil prices are really very volatile, natural gas has been rather inert and has held this level here around $3 for the last couple of weeks. It's at $2.996 in here right now, and a clear downward dynamic would really be required to question that we're not going to see higher natural gas prices over the next few weeks and months. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.